Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, queer foster kids. One of my guests this week is producing a documentary film about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender youth in foster care called America's Most Unwanted, Stories of Hope and Survival from Former Foster and Group Home Kids. My other guest is one of the subjects in that film. They both spent much of their young years in foster homes, and they're here to talk with us about their experiences in the double closet of being both queer and in foster care. Filmmaker Shani Heckman, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you for having me.
And Fresh White, film star-to-be, thanks for coming in to share your story.
Right on. Thanks for having me.
First, Shani, tell us a little bit about your film, America's Most Unwanted. What inspired you to produce a documentary about foster kids and former foster kids?
Well, first off, I myself am a former foster kid. And for a while, I was closeted about being a former foster kid. And I would be always very out about being an orphan and, you know, high school graduate, yada, yada, but never would tell anyone I was a foster kid. And there's so many negative statistics, and I was at a festival, and they were asking me what my new project was going to be, and I recently just read this article, and I was like, you know, I'm going to make a film about foster kids.
And your festival, you mean you were at a film festival
yes,
recently?
Film
because,
festival. Yes.
Yeah, I should let people know. Shani had a previous film called Wrong Bathroom. In 2005. Tell us just a little bit about that film.
Well, that film exposes the battle for entry for masculine-identified women and feminine-identified men and or transgender people to go into restrooms that are specifically male or female.
And this is a short film that was, I know it was in the Gay Film Festival, and it was sort of, I didn't actually see it, but from what I hear, it was somewhat humorous, but with a very serious subject.
Yes, and that's my angle in life is that approach what are significant subjects with as much humor and passion as possible. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, I hope to make this film the same, and hence the title, mm-hmm. America's Most Unwanted. You know, we're most unwanted because we're foster kids and everyone wants to ignore us, but really we're not because we give so much to society. So another kind of play on words.
So I'm curious. A minute ago, you said that you were out about being an orphan, but not about being a foster kid. So apparently there was some shame for you about being a foster kid, but not about being an orphan. Is that
correct?
Right?
Correct.
And Fresh, was that similar for you? Or were you not ever an orphan? Maybe I shouldn't use that term and get confused there.
You know, I was an orphan, but for such a short period of time, my first 6 months.
Uh-huh.
So that was something I myself didn't realize until my late 30s, never really put it together. Oh, well, let's see, if they didn't bring me home until I was 6 months old, I must have been somewhere.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, okay. It was interesting learning.
So,
but, yeah, I was out.
So what's the difference between, you know, the shame or the feeling about being an orphan as opposed to being a foster kid?
Well, I think orphan happens to you, and orphan already has this kind of like, oh, Orphan Andy, actually. She was very popular when I was growing up. I actually tried out for it, too. And, you know, oh, poor orphan. Whereas foster kid is kind of like, ooh, screw up.
Hmm.
And I don't know why I got that and where I learned that, but I think it is something that society does kind of, you know, even though, again, these are still children that have things happen to them,
mm-hmm.
for some reason, foster kids are assumed to be more responsible for that.
So when you were in school as a child, you didn't want people
I was a foster kid. Hell no.
The same for you, Fresh?
No, I don't think I talked about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how conscious I was about hiding it, but I didn't talk about it.
I was very conscious about hiding it.
So you never came
to my house.
So let's go there. So what were your homes like? I mean, can you give a description? I'm sure obviously all kinds of different people are foster parents, so there's all different kinds of foster homes. But can you kind of like just paint us a little picture of what yours were like?
Ours are so different.
I think so, yeah. Why don't you start with yours? Because I think yours is a better picture.
Right,
Fresh, Fresh White.
I've got like the beautiful picture in the beginning. Parents are somewhat ex-hippies in a way, but not. West Indian mother, Southern father, they're both black. We'll watch Beatle cartoons, do a lot of cuddling. You know, I meet the police department, the milkman, and the world's full of love. And that's, and then I'm adopted,
mm-hmm.
right before my foster mom dies, and then my foster dad basically is disappears.
No, I'm a little bit confused there. So when you said you were adopted by your foster parents?
This is the same home
you were living in this whole time?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so then she died, or she was very sick and was going to die.
Right.
Then you were adopted. Cancer. Okay.
And then right before she died, she wanted to keep there was a younger sister who's from another family who was adopted. She wanted to keep us in the family, so she literally adopted us in October and died in February.
Wow.
So, and I think that my foster father, who became the adoptive father, just wasn't ready to, that was not what he wanted. And not the death so much as like, but even being left with two young females. And so, he went into the bottle, basically.
Mm-hmm. And Shaney, your story?
Well, I was in a professional foster home, I like to call it, in that they were definitely doing it. Perhaps they started off with, you know, kindness and wanting to help children, perhaps. But when I arrived, and this is several years into their professional foster care offerings, there was, you know, 2 to 3 foster kids there at a time. And they completely remodeled our house, got a new car and a hot tub while we were there. So, and we never once received any money for our own personal...
No allowance,
nothing for shampoo, soap.
Was the food any good, at least?
We did get one meal that we cooked.
Uh-huh.
I just remember paying for everything, all my own clothes, all my own hair and personal products. And, you know, that adds up when you're a teenager in high school.
Sure. And so, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. So it sounds like there are some foster parents who are in it as a financial, it's like their job.
That's their job.
Okay.
In addition to whatever job they have.
Right.
Because they
it's
also
like extra income
full-time.
Away.
Exactly.
For some.
And I do believe in the kindness of my heart that, you know, they probably did start off wanting to help children, but then they realized, oh, I could put bunk beds in, you know?
Uh-huh. Okay. Maximize the profit.
Right. And that's $800 a head.
Mm-hmm.
Easy math. Mm-hmm. I'd be doing it too, maybe.
do you have any sense of how prevalent that is, or?
Well, this is also Delaware, and I think things are changing a lot. I'm not sure.
And that was a few years ago. We're talking 20 years ago.
Yes,
or so.
Thank you. And I have
roughly.
To say, you know, foster youth are a lot luckier today. There's a lot more programs. There's programs in high schools. There was no program in any high school that I went to, and when I was growing up, my social worker disappeared for 4 years. I didn't have any connection with the state at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the only good thing about my foster care experience was that they forced me to graduate from high school.
Okay.
And they saved my Social Security.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, thank you.
So, first of all, you're listening to Out in the Bay on KELW 91.7 FM. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are San Francisco filmmaker Shaney Heckman and Fresh White, one of the former foster kids in Shaney's film In Progress, America's Most Unwanted.
Also an artist.
As a matter of fact, you're going to be performing at this benefit that's coming up, which we'll talk about a little
MCing.
Later.
I'm MCing.
That's not performing.
His
okay.
fans are all emailing me, too.
So how do your foster parents deal with you being queer if you identified as such at that age? Fresh?
You know, my experience with anything queer when my mom was alive was absolute homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing this woman on the street with short cropped hair and earrings and no makeup on and just jeans and a t-shirt and thinking, wow, she's so attractive. You know, I'm like 8 years old. She was probably like 16, you know? And my mom saying, look at her. She looks just terrible and blah, blah, blah. By the time I was 15, I was, because I also had to support myself.
It's like kinda
how
you look now.
Working at 14. Yeah, exactly. My dad taught me how to tie my tie.
Okay.
I started working in a bar at 15, 16 in the Bowery. And he's the one who showed me how to tie ties and lend me some shirts. So I got some of those. The experience was not too bad. I was fortunate.
So how old were you when your mom died?
11. Turned 11.
So he was helping you to be a bartender and fit into that male world, or he was helping you to be a queer?
He was... It was a moment we had. There was no real help happening.
Okay.
There was a moment that we had that I remember.
Okay.
Where I went and he saw how I was coming home and I asked him if I could borrow his tie and how to tie it, and he had no problem showing me how to do it. He didn't speak out against it. He didn't speak for it because he didn't really talk.
Uh-huh. Okay, he just did it. He just showed you.
Yeah, he showed me, and that was a good moment, and that was it.
And what about your parents, Shani, on the queer topic?
Well, for me, I definitely was different, and I'm pretty sure my foster parents assumed I was queer, but I always had a boyfriend that I didn't sleep with, and he was great, and he would get me out of the house, and it was a very hetero environment. It was very just heterosexism, and having sex with men was very promoted in this foster home in particular. It was very not
even for kids?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
They didn't have a problem
with
that.
Well, their son tried to rape me, and it was kind of okay.
Okay.
So, yeah. And the foster father was very, you know.
Didn't give you any help about that.
He liked to give you massages, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. So I definitely wouldn't have been queer there. And I feel like I was, but it was just not a safe place to be queer in Delaware at that time at all. Like, the only bisexual person I knew got beat up every day, and so that's why I think I'm so interested in the double closet, because I do feel like I was in it, even though I wasn't even aware of my own queer consciousness. Mm-hmm. Although, as soon as I got out of there and arrived in L.A., I became instantly queer. So,
what have you found from?
And I look like this in high school too.
So. Okay, which is now how you,
very,
how is
very
like
butch.
This? Now, which two of you looks butcher?
I know.
Well, I don't think we. There
really
is no such
tight
thing.
Is that why you became such friends? Or?
Yeah, there's no such thing. I mean, that's the.
Yeah, you can never.
That's
be
sort of
butch.
High school talk about uh-huh. butcher or not butcher. You know, you are who you are.
Yeah.
So. What have you found in talking to people who are going to be in your film? How many people have you interviewed so far, first of all? And I'm curious to know, among, you know, the younger ones, how has the situation changed? And is there still a lot of problems that gay, lesbian, and trans kids have growing up in foster homes now?
Well, it's really interesting, actually. I have to say that it seems like foster care has definitely changed for the better. Like, the amount of outreach and support and peer support they have, and also organizational support that's available for foster youth, as well as funding. None of that was there. For instance, Taruko Dabashi, she's one of our main subjects. She just graduated from Jefferson High. Congratulations. And is starting Berkeley.
Congratulations.
Out queer. You know, her MySpace name is "We just got gay marriage" on whatever date that was. I'm mm-hmm. sorry, I can't remember. And you know, and like, she's very out and proud. She wore a rainbow dress to her prom, took her girlfriend, 17 years old, going to Berkeley. I'm okay. sorry, that never would have existed in my
Jefferson
life.
High School's here in the city.
Daly City.
Okay,
exactly.
Daly City. Okay.
Daly City. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then I also had the pleasure to interview Matilda Stubbs, who's a recent UC Santa Cruz graduate who grew up entirely in foster care. Also out and proud through the foster care experience, is like professional Girl Scout, works for the Girl Scouts organization.
Where did
and
she grow up?
She's off to grad school in Chicago. She grew up in California mostly, in different foster homes in both Los Angeles and the Bay Area, I want to say, and forgive me if I'm wrong. I haven't actually transcribed her interview yet.
Okay.
I mean, I just remember her being very empowering. Like, I just... The youth today in general, but foster youth in particular, are definitely taking on mm-hmm. a lot of the great challenges that our society has.
So you told me when we met about a week ago that part of the reason you're doing this film is to break the stereotype that foster kids, you know, can't make it, or they're screw-ups or whatever, but they fail, if I can use that word, mm-hmm. Because there are some statistics that make it look pretty bad. But so what do you find that, you know, helped you succeed, the two of you, and the other people in your film? Like, what set them apart or helped them out? Or, you know, is it just a matter, like anybody in life, whether they're in foster care or not, some people are going to succeed and some aren't?
Well, I do think it's that. I mean, it definitely seems like it's clearly that we all come into the earth with different past lives or whatever. And I know Matilda says for her, you know, what she offers to other people is to be your own advocate, and I think that's huge. And for me, my thing was overachieving, and for a lot of other people, being an overachiever, I kept myself busy, distracted. I used education as a stepping stone, and also as a place of solace. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved to go to school because that's where no one beat me. You know, no one tried to touch me in a bad way at school. Thank God. So I love it, and I'm still really good at it.
Fresh?
I mean, I want to say that I feel like I had a very fortunate beginning. Unlike what Shane's experience was in Delaware and New York, I came out of the Westchester County Child Services. And when my mom got sick, we were provided with house care, and people came and took us on trips. And
yeah, New York's good.
We were taken to different families that, you know, that were nearby. So I was treated really well. I think that because of the services that were provided and the family structure that I was in, it's the reason I'm alive today. I was a really hyperactive kid and took that through most of my years and really was self-destructive to a point where it's amazing that I can even talk straight. And I really believe that a lot of that came from the roots of the family and what they believed in. There are older siblings that the adoptive parents had that were available at times, but I left home really early. So, I feel successful because not just of who I am and what I do, but also knowing people like Shaney. And there are other people in the community who sort of support the idea that, yeah, we're foster kids, we're proud, we're here. So I think I answered your question.
Do you see some like foster care, like sort of a community growing up, like a former foster kids community sort of happening?
I don't see that. What I see is if you talk to people and you get to have real conversations, and Shaney and there are a few other people in this community where I can say I was adopted, and Shaney can then come out and say she's adopted or vice versa, we have community building. So there's so many of us out here that are...
It is actually really amazing.
It's amazing.
How many people...
Yeah, I can almost say 1 in 10 of the people that I know, and I know a lot of people.
And so I suppose if you wanted to meet a few more of them, you could come to the benefit for your film, which is coming up on the 30th of this month, Saturday, August 30th, at El Rio, from 3 to 8 p.m. in the afternoon. This is sort of a fundraising party for this film.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about it. Who's going to be there? And
well, we're super delighted to have a lot of amazing performers. We have Joshua Klipp, who Margaret Cho just made an amazing video of. You should watch it on YouTube. It's very hot.
And he's been a guest on this show before.
And he's hot and sexy and talented as hell. Nomi Lam, who's just amazing, profound performer, poet, artist. Divine Feud, which also features the DJ Trouble. And she is just, that's a great band. Twilight Vixen Review, Best of the Bay, and Vixen Noor, who also is known as Veronica Combs. I'm so excited to have her because I've known her for many fabulous years. You should have her on the show, speaking of. We'll have a great Fresh,
right
MC
on, right
Fresh,
on.
Who refuses to perform, but, you know, he's
performing. I don't
know,
I haven't gotten
she's
enough
performing
emails yet.
According
on the
to this
stage,
list, you got to do a, you do a, was a smooth rendition of Barry White.
I don't know if anybody
Very
knows
smooth.
Barry
do,
White
do, do, do.
Anymore.
Couple other people in there too. I feel like
wasn't that the background music I was starting up? Do you recognize that?
Oh,
I didn't do it right. I guess I wasn't doing it very well.
My first, my last.
There you go.
Also a great singer.
Okay. So anyway, that's on Saturday the 30th at El Rio in the afternoon, 3 to 8 p.m. And so, how long of a process is making this film?
Oh, it's going to be a long process, not just because it's a film and film.
Full length this time, not just a, yeah, not a 9-minute
short.
I want to
spend some time with the characters and get to know them. Have you seen the film Red Without Blue?
I have not.
I did watch that last night, and it's a good example of what I like to do. Follow the character for a while, see how their lives change, and ideally the film will be serving as a role model for current foster youth, so... It's important to me to cover as many people as possible. Mm. And so I'm thinking 2 to 3 years.
Okay, so this is early in the process. But
very early in the process.
Already shot a few interviews and we're going on, yeah.
We welcome people to come on as producers, editors, transcribers, interviewees, all kinds of... There's lots of fun available
should you want to
come in.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are San Francisco filmmaker Shaney Heckman and Fresh White, one of the former foster kids in Shaney's film in progress, America's Most Unwanted. And tell us the subtitle again. I don't have the full string in front of me. America's Most Unwanted.
Stories of hope and survival from former foster and group home kids.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for having us.
So we're not done yet.
Oh, all right. I'm like, what's going on? Thank you, but thank you again. You're awesome.
In doing a little bit of research, I did find online this lawsuit against, and since you were from New York City fresh, there was this lawsuit about 10 years ago, a federal class action lawsuit on behalf of gay, lesbian, and bisexual youth in foster care, charging that because of their sexual orientation, they were routinely subjected to physical violence and psychological abuse in New York City's child welfare system, and that included, things going on from unrelenting harassment to broken bones to rape by peers, foster parents, and staff members of child welfare agencies. So, and I was curious. I didn't see any. So I was looking for more recent suits. Are there other things going on like that still, or is that kind of like,
you know,
the horrible days in the past?
I mean, I think what's important to note about that is a constant. This is a constant situation that happens to all children, foster and non-foster. And so when these things come out, it's good that they come out, but it's a rotting part of our society that we have to take care of. So I'm glad that these people were able to come out and do their thing. The most recent abuse suit that I read about online was about a group of children whose last name were Higgins, and they I believe there were 9 of them. Their mom and dad died. Their mom and dad's friends took them in, and they were actually on the show, The Makeover Show, the mm-hmm. house makeover show.
Okay.
The house got made over. There were 9 bedrooms provided, and the whole thing got done, and they got kicked out of the family. So there are
lots... Wait, who got kicked out? The 9 kids after the makeover?
Kicked out of the house.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were actually able to sue the family and sue the makeover, actually, company. But the point of the story is that every day there's abuse happening, and it's very unfortunate. And every day there's new changes, and people are coming out. And in Oakland, you're driving down the road, and you see the big adoption sign for LGBT youth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a serious change in our society.
So now LGBT youth do have a place to go that is LGBT-friendly, which did mm-hmm. not exist 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Definitely not 30 years
right.
ago.
Right, and I do know that some of the adoption agencies are specifically
family
having
builders,
campaigns.
Exactly.
Family builders, for example,
exactly.
Going after trying to get gay and queer foster kids placed.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And adoptions. This is something that is more recent from New York. This is from the Urban Justice Center in New York. It says, of the estimated 20,000 teenagers living on the streets of New York City, almost half self-identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. That's a huge number, half. And these teens have been thrown out of their homes or have run away from foster care because of homophobia, harassment, and physical abuse. I'm just curious to know what your sense of... Are there similar numbers here in San Francisco, here in the Bay Area, as far as the number of, homeless youth who are gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender?
Well, I actually was reading on the internet on it's called HeySF.org, and it's Honoring Emancipated Youth. It's a local organization, which looks like very cool, and we can be members. We're former. We're no longer youthful, as you know.
I'm youthful. God damn
it. We're all youthful.
They speak to the fact that they say that 34% of the homeless youth in San Francisco that are also LGBT as well.
Okay.
And we should say that in San Francisco, I think, has the largest largest homeless children population in the country. It could be California, but... Yeah,
I think we're in competition with LA on that one.
Yeah, LA certainly does have a big number. So what else? Is there anything else you want to add about the process of making the film? And you did mention a minute ago you're trying to get people to be involved with it. So if you can detail that a little bit more, I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, it is a long process, as I mentioned, to make a film. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, I have a full-time life, too.
You mean you have a job? You're not a paid filmmaker?
No, not yet. So I'm looking for someone to pay me to be a filmmaker. No, but, you know, it's good to have other things going on in life, too. It keeps things interesting. You don't want to just only be a filmmaker. But I go to graduate school as well. But I am looking for and it, when I think of producer, I think of, yes, someone who can help with fundraising, but also someone who can help with scheduling and organizing. As I mentioned, there are lots of foster youth in the Bay Area, former foster youth who are very successful. And unfortunately, I'm only one person. I can't interview them all. So even some of the camera skills who might be interested in going out and shooting some interviews, shooting some B-roll, getting involved in the project, there's a multitude of ways to get involved, including website.
Okay. Fresh, I want to ask you, when Shani was interviewing you for this film and told you she was starting this project, what were you thinking about, and what impact do you think it can have or hope it will have, and why did you get involved?
When Shani told me about the project, I must say, like, I feel like I've been, over the last 5 to 10 years, in the process of dealing with it all. I've been sort of, like, not having to deal with the whole being adopted, being trans-identified probably from the age of 6, you know, when you really look at it. And I think what I'm hoping for is that more people can be open about who they are, and more people will be hopeful. Maybe some youth will see that through this film, like, you don't have to be sort of living under the idea that foster children are doomed. You know, like, the truth is that you can be whatever you want to be and have a wonderful life and know wonderful people.
It's just another chapter in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And don't let it be the dominant one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let it hold you back. Don't let it keep you down, because it's really just a little chapter. A bookmark, even.
Thank you very much. San Francisco filmmaker Shani Heckman and Fresh White, one of the former foster kids in Shani's film In Progress, America's Most Unwanted, Stories of Hope and Survival from Former Foster and Group Home Kids. You can learn more about the film online at mostunwantedfilm.org, where there's also an events tab with info on that fundraising party we mentioned at El Rio this coming Saturday of Labor Day weekend, Saturday, August 30th from 3 to 8 in the afternoon. Shani Heckman, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you, Eric.
Fresh
thank
White,
you
thank you.
Thanks,
also,
Jason.
Besides the, you had a website for an organization locally that can give information about foster care issues, especially queer folks and foster kids. What is that, Shani?
It is heysf.org, and there's also Youth Connections.
Youthconnections.org. Great. Thanks very much. Out in the Bay is independently supported, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW for studio time and other support. Thanks also to this week's engineer, Joanne Marr. We're broadcast Thursdays at 7:30 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. Pacific time. You can hear past shows and sign up for free weekly podcasts on our website, outinthebay.com. You can also read our blah, 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 blah blog with our occasional whining and opining about current topics, and even submit your own tirade. Check it out, outinthebay.com. Big thanks to Rob Yonker and Ted Wigga at WY Enterprises in San Leandro for revamping and maintaining outinthebay.com. Personal and business services, wyenterprises.com. Out in the Bay is also supported in part by me, Eric Jansen, minister, offering non-denominational, non-traditional civil marriage officiating and planning services. More info available online at outinthebay.com on the left side. You can also email me, Eric at outinthebay.com. We do want to hear from you, so drop us an email, Eric at outinthebay.com or Marilyn at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.